This is Publishing Talks, a podcast about publishing, books, and the future maybe of technology as well. I'm your host, David Wilk, and today I'm talking to Lise Quintana, who's the founder and CEO of a company called Narrative Technologies, based in Santa Cruz, California, and the creator as well of an authoring and reading platform called Lithomobilis. How are you, Lise?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
So maybe you could talk a little bit about your background as a writer and technology person, and kind of talk a little bit about what prompted you to start a new company that is really trying to, as you, I think you've said, subvert or reorient the way writing is done and the way books can be consumed. And I assume you mean not all books, but, you know, it just the possibility for some kinds of books to expand the way that they are created.
Sure. For a long time, my background as a technologist and my background as a writer were essentially the same thing. I did a lot of tech writing for both hardware and software early in my career. And the crummy thing was that I am really a fiction writer. I write novels. I write a lot of short stories. And when I was doing tech writing, my bosses would always say, "But you love writing, right?" And when you're a tech writer, yeah, you may love writing, but tech writing is like writing a term paper every day. Nobody likes that. That's ridiculous. But it did get me used to, you know, technology, and, you know, I never had that fear of it that some people, mostly older people nowadays, have. I always saw it as a way to solve problems and a way to accomplish things that you can't accomplish otherwise. So then in 2011, I got my MFA in creative writing, and the stories that I was working on at the time were large in scope, lots of points of view, lots of places around this fictional world that I was creating. And I was sad because there was no good way to represent that in an intuitive way to the reader. My aim was really to expand the conversation between the author and the reader, giving the reader a little more of a participatory role in that conversation. So I just decided that if I couldn't find that thing that would work to show my work to the public, I would make it myself. And luckily for me, in Santa Cruz, we have an event called Tech Raising, where people with an idea get up in front of a large group of people consisting of developers and VCs and business advisors. They pitch their idea. If they can get a team together, they have the weekend to create a demo. And then on Sunday, you show your demo to a group of VCs and they give you feedback. And I got a team together. We did our demo. We created a demo in a weekend, which astounded me at the time and still I'm pretty impressed with. And the feedback I got was that I should really pursue it as an actual product.
So just to make sure for people who may not understand, what you're talking about creating is an authoring platform. Is that correct?
Correct. So the first thing that we had to do was the e-reader. That's the sexy part that's public facing that everyone's going to see. And it needed to be able to display anything that we threw at it. So that was the first thing that we created.
Right. And then concurrently or secondarily, you have to create the tool set and the platform for the author to make this new thing that you're talking about.
Exactly.
So, and you've done both. And you know that, you know, for many people, I think that the idea, the notional idea of kind of nonlinear storytelling and multi-layered storytelling has been around for a while. I remember, I can't remember the name of the company, but it was in Cambridge, Massachusetts probably in the early 90s, creating, you know, essentially multi-layered, multimedia storytelling and distributing them on floppy disks. And they were the kinds of stories that you're talking about, with multiple points of view, the reader having the opportunity to explore different avenues of a story, you know, with multiple perspectives and multiple places for both the reader and the author to meet. And you know, they've been around for a while, and I think one of the questions that we, you know, a lot of people ask, you know, is rhetorically, how many readers really will take advantage of this? Because what you're talking about in a lot of ways, and I think I've read you talk about this, it's a form of reader empowerment. You know, that if you're not, you don't want to read the story the way a single author might have written a single narrative. If you have an author willing to create multiplicity in the story and the characters, that the reader can then choose where she or he wants to go with it.
That's true. The company you're talking about is Eastgate Systems. And where they went wrong was Eastgate Systems not only created the technology, but they also acted as the publisher. So they were kind of the gatekeeper of everything that was going to be created with this technology. And what that means is that one small set of people was making all of the decisions about what would get published. So there were very few pieces ever published through Eastgate Systems that ever got much attention. There are a couple, the one that I'm most familiar with is called The Patchwork Girl, and it's a work of genius, but you can't get it anymore. A lot of people don't have computers that even have a CD drive anymore. My MacBook Pro does not have a CD drive on it. So, you know, in my office at this moment, I do not own a device that could read a CD with that story on it.
Right, so, but that's more of a technology issue of presentation and distribution rather than of the technology of the storytelling itself.
Right, and the technology of the storytelling, I think, and it's actually important that the hardware technology and the ability to work with the software and understand how to create those stories, I think, go hand in hand. Because I really feel that hypertext, which is a lot of what you're talking about, got popular in the mid-1980s and had fizzled out by the mid-1990s. Because there just weren't enough people reading it. There weren't enough people who understood it, who could follow it. Studies done at the time showed that people did not retain information that they read in hypertext as well as they retain information that they read in a paper book. And so if you think about it, that's sort of like, do you retain more information when you hold a physical encyclopedia in your hand and read an entire entry in an encyclopedia? Or do you retain information better when you go on a wiki walk, where you start in one entry, and then you link out to another entry and read a bit there, and then you link out to another thing? You get that information very differently. And if the author is not skilled in creating a story that accretes, that adds layers little by little, a little bit of information at a time, if that author is not skilled at that, you're just going to have nonsense. And I think that there were not enough authors who understood how to create those stories to sustain that as a thing by the mid-1990s.
No, that's a fair point. And do you think that it also seems like the development of interactive and multi-layered storytelling would take some years to evolve where you know, maybe people who grew up on video game storytelling have a better understanding of how to execute that and how to interact with the story itself.
That is actually the best analogy, because right now the big hypertext model is called Twine. And Twine is an open source software that anyone can use. It's super easy. And you can create these hypertext stories. And people are also using it, because you can create your own macros, because it is open source, to make games with. And we have found that for Lithomobilis, the people who, when we did user testing, the people who most immediately intuited what we were doing were gamers.
Right. So do you think that what you're doing lends itself best to a certain kind of storytelling, and whether that means that also readers of a certain kind would be more likely to respond and participate in the kinds of stories created by your authors?
I do think that's true. I don't pretend that Lithomobilis is going to be the be-all, end-all replacement of all e-reading software ever. I think that it solves a certain segment of problems. And I think that for people who, say, like George R. R. Martin's Game of Thrones series, which has a ton of characters in a ton of places, it has lots of simultaneous storylines going on. Those kind of people who read those huge immersive stories will love it.
People right, but, who, but isn't it, is that I keep wondering, will the authors be willing and able to write enough in that world? You know, I mean, George R. R. Martin's a good example because he's written a lot, but he still hasn't written enough to satisfy his readers. You continually hear people complaining. Now, of course, then you have fan fiction, but are there authors who have the wherewithal and the commitment to do the kinds of creations that you're thinking of?
I think that there are. I think that romance writers, there are romance writers who tend to write the same milieu and have different characters within that milieu. And those books are, they're like potato chips. They're short. They're easy to read. The people who love romances consume them compulsively and hugely. And so I think that there are markets where the ability to just get this coming at you, get it, you know, streamed at you in huge amounts is great.
And what about the idea of, you know, thinking about television shows where, you know, you have a showrunner and a bunch of writers. And I'm wondering why it isn't kind of an automatic next step for interactive fiction to develop as a form for it to become collaborative, where either a single person has a concept for a world and writes some of it, but brings in other writers and says, you know, this is the world. Here's the Bible I've created. Follow the Bible, but you're working your own territory within this world. Or even to have a bunch of writers collaborate together, even though it might be, you know, there are times when they might butt heads, as writers often do, but, you know, to collaborate on an entire world where maybe I, you know, if I'm thinking about a literal universe, I'll write the story of one planet, you write the story of another planet. Maybe our planets connect to each other in some subtle ways, or maybe they don't, but we're, you know, for the reader, it's all one big world.
That is actually happening. It's been happening for years in the sci-fi world. That's what's called a shared world anthology, where you have, maybe it's comes from a story that somebody else has already written a time ago, and you take the world created in that story and people run with it. People create a great example of that is the Cthulhu mythos. How many authors have written Cthulhu stories that were taken from those original H.P. Lovecraft stories? And, you know, you just pile on more stories into that world and more myths and more monsters. And, you know, that's more stuff for people to love and get into.
Right. So have you pushed Lithomobilis? Have you promoted it as that kind of a tool?
You know, we haven't yet. And that has more to do with the fact that we wanted to nail some back-end stuff down. But that is exactly the place to push it. The other place where that's being done is in grade school series books, like the Sweet Valley High series. Valley High is being written by a bunch of people who, you know, are not necessarily even using their own names. They're just cranking these out. These are, you know, junior writers being given, here's your plot outline, have me a book in a week.
Right. And I think there are some other kids' books being created in similar ways.
Yep.
So, you know, I know that it happens. It just seems that the platform that you've created would be an ideal platform setup, you know, an enabler of that kind of experience on a, you know, maybe on a different level than traditional print books have done.
Absolutely. And for publishers, the beauty is that once somebody has bought one thing, the cost to market them the next thing drops to zero because it can be marketed from within the book they're already reading.
Well, and I'd also see it as kind of the enabler to make the reader a writer. And, you know, we see this happening on Wattpad as the kind of community of writers and readers. And not every reader is a writer, and not, I understand completely, never imagine that to happen. But it would be interesting to, you know, to have a storyline going, and then you discover a reader has an interest in, they may not want to write an entire book. They might just want to go off and write about a character's backstory that they happen to love. And I can see how that would be appealing for everybody, not only the reader, but also the author and the community around the book.
Well, except that we made a couple of business decisions that we have made for my press, Zoetic Press, and other publishers may feel differently. One of them is we're not excited about putting social media in books. When I read, I want to immerse myself in the reading experience, and to have somebody else's opinion of what constitutes a great passage, or, you know, have somebody else's commentary while I'm trying to read, I find very distracting. It's sort of like somebody behind you in the movie theater telling you, oh my God, this is where the guy jumps out from behind the thing. You don't want that. You know, I don't want that.
No, that's true. I think in fiction that you are, I mean, I can see a distinction between fiction and nonfiction.
Yes.
That you can have a community. Let's say you are working on a book of history and you're studying, you know, you're writing something about the Vikings. There's a huge amount of information out there, and there is lots of territory to be covered. So it's possible that you could see a collaboration among writers who know something about their field, but then there are people who can bring in other bits of information that may not necessarily be part of the original authorial community. I was just talking about how you might be able to engage the reader who has some information or desire to write about something, and bring them into the community. Not necessarily, but I can see though that in a nonfiction project, you might look at the social commentary differently because it would be more like, it would be more appropriate to have conversation about ideas when it is a nonfiction subject. I mean, I know there are also people who like the idea of social around reading fiction, but I think that's more in educational circumstances where it makes sense for a teacher to have a class and they talk about a book. And, you know, that's a different environment, I think, than kind of reading for oneself.
Yes, absolutely.
So, well, let's talk a little bit more now about the kind of general positioning of writing and reading in the digital universe. You know, there's lots of conversation in publishing about what readers want. But more often than not, there isn't really an engagement directly with the reader. It's more about the publisher engaging with the sellers of books. And digital does enable a direct relationship between reader and author, reader and publisher, in a way that was not possible previously. So, but, you know, publishers don't really look at the kinds of things that you're talking about as mainstream to their interests. And I'm just wondering whether you've had any what kind of publisher interest you've had in what you're doing?
Well, so right now we haven't had as much publisher interest as we like, partly because a lot of the, especially in the Big Five and all of their millions of imprints, they still see digital as sort of an afterthought. You make a paper book, you create this big thing, and then if it does well, you go ahead and release an ebook. And the ebook is just, you know, an EPUB 3 or in some sad cases, a PDF of the paper book that you've just created. And they miss out on other parts of the book experience that they could be adding in that I think would garner even more interest. And I think that the one thing that I do not think is a great thing about the ability to go directly from author to reader is that all that that means is that there is an awful lot of terrible fiction out there. And the more terrible fiction you have out there by people who were dissatisfied or impatient with the regular publishing process and gave up and decided to self-publish, the more of that you have out there, the harder it becomes for people to find something really good to read. Things have to stand out now in a way that they haven't before, because you've got competition from, you know, your friend at the office who, you know, published their fan fiction thing and they want you to read it. And, you know, now your Aunt Mabel has made a thriller that she wants you to read. Now that everybody has their ebook that they want everyone to read, those are competing with books written by people who have been vetted and, you know, who have been, you know, passed the test essentially of traditional publishing. And the reason that I like traditional publishing is because it does mean somebody else read this and thought it worthwhile.
Well, that's fair. But you know, you realize that if the, what is defined as commercial publishing has to exclude, to a great extent, non-commercial quality writing, because there isn't enough. It's not whether the book is good, it's whether the book is good and will sell. Or in some cases, the question is whether the book will sell, whether it's good or not. So there is a category of publishing that I think by necessity would be not included as viable for a commercial publisher, but still is quality writing because the audience for it is too small. And I tend to think that the kind of book that you're talking about, which may be more time-consuming to produce and therefore more expensive, is the kind of book that is harder to publish commercially.
So I agree that there are great books out there that were self-published. Hugh Howey has made a phenomenal splash with his entire oeuvre, but the thing that sets the Hugh Howeys and the Catherine Wilson. Catherine Wilson wrote a trilogy, a historical fiction trilogy, and very well received, has won awards. It's absolutely beautiful. And she put it out herself because by the time she was finished writing it, she was about 70 and decided that she did not want to wait for the year or two that it would take to find an agent and get a book deal, and then another year or two that it would take for the book to actually come out, that she was going to take that on herself. And she dug in. She did a beautiful professional job with the book. She did both print and ebooks. And then she devoted herself to the selling and marketing of her book. Hugh Howey has said in some panel that I saw him on a while back, that when he started writing, his plan was that he was going to spend 10 years doing nothing but content creation. No marketing, no nothing, just content creation. He was only going to release his books online. He was not going to do paper books. And he paid to have them edited. He paid to have all the things done that a you know, commercial publisher would do for an author's books. Had it, you know, professionally set. It looked beautiful, and the writing was really quality stuff. So he has a huge following, and because he is not doing any kind of selling or marketing, his books are all sold by word of mouth. He is spending all of his time cranking out new work. He has a large body of work now. And so readers that are new to him have this great big mountain of stuff that they can attack. And so I think that it is possible, you know, there are absolutely those people who are self-published, but all of the ones that are really outstanding efforts, those authors have done exactly the same amount of work and put the same amount of effort into the finished product that they would have done to be picked up by a commercial publishing house.
So are there particular storytelling projects that you find to be really compelling that fall into the category of book that you see Lithomobilis engendering? What examples do you have that already exist that you find compelling?
So as we've said, George R. R. Martin's Song of Ice and Fire series, which most people who have only seen it on television know as Game of Thrones, that is a great example. Anyone who has read the books knows that the way that those books are written is one point of view at a time. Each chapter is a separate person's point of view. Neal Stephenson, who wrote the System of the World trilogy, that ended up being three books, each one with nine chapters, and it follows several point of view characters through this particular period in history. A lot of Stephen King stuff ends up being the same way. If you think of The Stand, it's a lot of characters with different points of view converging on the ultimate climax of the book where they all come together. So there are absolutely lots of authors that people already know and love who are writing in this style.
And are there any emerging that you know about that you think we should be paying attention to that we might not have heard of or that we will hear of potentially through the work that you're doing?
Let's see. We've had a few authors that we're really, really pleased about, but most of them are working in very short fiction. There's a gentleman named David Landrum whose work we love, Karina Bissett. She's a poet, and a lot of her work is very well-researched and very thoughtfully put together, and we love them both, and they have been in most of our issues of Non-Binary Review, which is our online journal. And they are backing the concept 100%, and this is a really difficult thing. This is where sort of being forward thinking comes around and bites us. Authors are broke. And so a lot of our authors don't have an eye device on which they could be reading this stuff. So the irony is it's really hard to work for a platform that you can't even see.
No, that's a fair point. I think the issue of the cost of technology and the ability to engage with technology if you're an impoverished writer, that is a really big issue.
Absolutely.
So, well, let's say then that I'm interested in reading kind of work that challenges the kind of basis of storytelling. So what you're saying is I should try Non-Binary Review and Zoetic Press, which is your publishing company, that you publish on the Lithomobilis platform that you've created.
Absolutely. And you can look for us in the iTunes store.
Okay. And do you run on Android or just on iOS devices?
For right now, it is just iOS devices, but in 2016, we will be coming out for Android.
Okay. And one more question. Is there somebody else who is doing work either in a similar vein or even in a non-similar but kind of corollary vein that you find really interesting that either I might not have heard of or the people who are listening might not have heard of that you think is really cool?
You know, there are so many companies that sort of rise like bubbles and pop and disappear. Inkling was doing some amazing stuff, putting a lot of video and audio into books. Slice Books was doing something very similar to what we were doing. And both of those companies ended up pivoting and are now working on very different business models. Creating new, unfamiliar ways for people to work is very, very difficult. Eli Horowitz and Russell Quinn have both worked on some beautiful, beautiful e-books. That Eli Horowitz has also written paper book companions published by FSG, but his books have these e-book component that are custom-made apps for each book.
No, that's interesting. I did not know about that, so I'm glad to hear that. That's exactly what I was looking for, is to learn about something I didn't know about before. So thank you. Well, thank you, Lise Quintana, for talking to me about Lithomobilis and multifaceted fiction writing and storytelling. This has been Publishing Talks, a podcast about the publishing industry and books. I'm David Wilk. I've been talking to Lise Quintana.